You're listening to the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast with John Rabin. All right, everybody, welcome to the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast. I'm John Rabin. This is episode 119, recorded this day on October 7th, 2020. What a year. As we all know, I hope you're doing all right. Great, relatively speaking. I hope everybody, relatively speaking, is doing well. I don't remember how my week's gone, honestly. It's like, John, how have you been doing? Well, I was just talking to a family member a couple days ago. How have you been doing? And I'm like, well, both my fantasy football teams lost this weekend. It's been really tough. We lost Austin Eckler and Nick Chubb at the same time, within an hour. At the same time, it was hard. It's been a hard weekend in that aspect. But how are you personally? Fine. How am I personally? Didn't you just hear what I said? Nick Chubb is out for 6 weeks. Maybe. I don't know. You answer people genuinely, they just don't get it. Recording in my podcast studio, aka the side of my bedroom, with the door shut as always. And normally when I'm recording here, I've got my cat in here, the original cat, and then the other cat is outside in the rest of the apartment, but it's in reverse. So I've got Q-Tip, the newer cat, is in here, and he is wearing a Hawaiian shirt. Now, the reason that he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt is that my fiance Crystal likes to, she got him the shirt because he's a black cat and he's very intimidating and scary. Unless he's wearing, like, she'll put the red bandana on him. So he's like, oh, look at him. He's like a little cowboy, you know, and it's just not, he doesn't look like a big, cause he's a huge fucking cat. So he doesn't look like a big, puma just hanging out in your apartment. He looks like a puma cowboy, I guess. But she also got him this Hawaiian shirt. And, you know, and it just, it's clearly the animal doesn't, you know, animals don't like being fully dressed very much. So, but we noticed that when he wears, because he has two speeds. He's either like about to take a nap and napping, or running full speed around the apartment, terrorizing the dog, the other cat, us, just jumping around. You know, he does this, he likes to do this usually 30 minutes before it's time to eat or after he's taken a shit. I don't know what it is about animals. After they poop, they're like, I'm lighter. This is the way to do it. I'm totally going to run now. I am going to sprint in a one bedroom. So we found out that when we put the Hawaiian shirt on him, it's calms him down. Like in the middle of when he's acting up and being kind of a dick, we put the shirt on him and button it up. And I don't know if it's like, if it's like a one of those weighted blankets or whatever, that's, it's like for anxiety, that like comforts him, or humiliation. Like, I know there are some kind of like jackets for like dogs with anxiety. You put them on there and it calms them down. This, I think, is humiliation. But he's kind of come to terms with it, because what happens is that when she puts it on him, he then gets treats for allowing her to put the shirt on him without scratching her. I can't put the shirt on him. He won't let me do it. He's like, fuck you, dude. I mean, you're fine, but you're not putting that. She can do it, but you can't, which I totally get. Totally get that. I'm like, I'm right there with you, bro. I'd be the same way. But, yeah, so he just chills him the fuck out. And, man. And so, like, now when she pulls out the Hawaiian shirt, when he's acting up, he immediately runs to the kitchen where the treats are and just sits there and waits and is like, all right, put it on me. Which I think is kind of a... Now I wonder if he just acts up so that he can get the shirt put on him, so that he can get treats and some kind of weird manipulative thing. But it's also it's funny because when he's got the Hawaiian shirt on, sometimes he falls asleep with like his face like laying on his face on the bed, and he just looks like a drunk. He looks like a drunk that passed out. You know, it looks like the character in Margaritaville. That's what he looks like. But it does calm him down, and I wish that I had a kitty Hawaiian shirt for my emotions and my thoughts. I wish I could do that. I wish I could put just the Hawaiian shirt over my thoughts and emotions and just go, ah, all right. No, it's cool. I guess I'll sleep now. And I know the answer to that is, well, John, there is something like that. It's called drugs. I'm aware. Don't know if you know that, but I am familiar with controlled substances. So I appreciate that you wanting to point out that exists. But if you're not going to take them, then... what do you have? Meditation? I guess I could breathe. I will try breathing. It's not as cool, though. Wish it was something I could just button up real quick. Anyway. Okay, so I don't know if you know this. I really didn't until I was curious and searched it. The King of England... during the Black Plague, when it killed millions of people over like 6 or 7 years. The King of England during that time was King Edward III, who became king when he was 14, something like that. And he lived to be 65 years old. 65. Oh, my phone says that's a notification. All right. Yeah, he lived to be 65 years old in the 1300s. That's insanely old. When he died, he passed along the, he outlived his son. So he passed it along to his grandson when he died. But yeah, so like he was fine. During all that shit, he's just like, and I bet if you asked him, well, what do you think about this Black Plague? What are you worried? He would have been like, no, I think things are going to be fine. Where's my turkey leg and whores? Like, I think he would have been like, I'm sure he was fine the whole time. So I guess my point is that maybe. You can't listen to royalty or a king or the really rich when it comes to a major health issue. Now, most of you listening to this know this. I'm just, I might as well be on my Facebook page going, hey, here's some obvious shit you already know, but what I'm saying is it's weird because you should never like follow the advice and follow the direction of somebody who has millions and millions of dollars because you're not on the same playing field. You know, oh, that person, you know, specifically the president of the United States, if, you know, let's say had a major health issue, like this past week, you know, I can't imagine anyone going, well, you know what, he seems to be handling COVID just fine. You know, I think I could too, because I also have a medical staff that will follow me around 24/7, and you know, a helicopter to fly me to my wing of a hospital. You know, should be great. I have access to all these experimental drugs and stuff like this. Totally, I can get that in the ER that I walk in and give a fake name and social security number too. Clearly, I could get the same treatment. Right. It's just, it's weird to me, but not even that. And like I said before, if your asshole is clenching up because I'm talking about a politician, just remember what I've always said. I don't talk about politics. I talk about politicians. And how much I hate them. No, I don't. I just talk in general. Because I don't understand how anybody can think that it's, when you're watching out, when you're taking care of yourself out there, everybody, what I'm saying is that if you know people who feel like they're going to be fine because of, you know, a politician or the Kardashians, not even politics, you may want to stay clear of them until we get a handle on this shit. Like, you really, when it comes to, like, you know, taking care of yourself. So you're watching out, you're taking your, you know, you're taking your vitamin D. Maybe you're trying to work on your immune system. You're, you know, you're taking precautions and social distancing shit and all that stuff. You're doing everything. You should also avoid stupid people. But it's my family. They're still stupid people. This is what phones are for. This is what Zoom is great for. There's nothing. Isn't it great that you could do that? Like think of all the people that you don't have to see. Like, I know it's bad. I know it sucks. I know you miss your friends, and I know you miss going to your haunts, and that sucks. But you know what doesn't suck? All the people you don't like that you don't see. Isn't that great? Or members of your family that you don't particularly care for, and you get to visit just for a little bit, like with the phone, and, you know, just like, just to, you know, FaceTime or Zoom somebody, and then, you know, it's uncomfortable for about 20 minutes, and then you're like, all right, well, that was it. Okay. Talk to you in 6 months. Great. Awesome. The limitations of this pandemic, there are some upsides. Because I actually took, you know, it's weird because I like this guy who calls himself a comedian. And you know what? I'm being unfair. Technically, he is. I saw his name on a comment underneath, like an Instagram post of another friend of mine, like when I, and it was like, oh shit, that's right, that's a person that existed, or that exists. I had forgotten, like, I haven't seen this particularly unfunny individual in, what, 9 months? Like, I've seen him once this year. So I've been going this whole time because there's a lot going on, right? And you're like, oh my God, that's a person that fucking exists. Holy shit, I'd forgotten. Man, I don't miss that guy. And neither do the audiences. All right. Wow. Moving on. So I had said last week that I had completely avoided the debate presidential debate shit, and I did. However, this thing came up when I was looking up, like, you know, you see different things. You see different shit pop up. In other articles, people make references or jokes or whatever. But this particular one was, it was another article, and it was about, what is it? Treatment advocates. That's right. I was like trying to figure out what it was, but it was I was looking up like recovery news shit and, you know, dealing with the, just anything new on the, you know, is there anything going on with, treatment with the opioid crisis, with the people dealing with addiction, during a pandemic where, you know, facilities in different places are dealing with having to be safe, trying to be open and safe, but that means turning away less people or like more people. They can't have it as many people like in detox centers and stuff. It really sucks because so they're having less people, but there's more demand because of the pandemic, because, you know, overdoses and overdose deaths and, you know, drug use, everything is up. And none of that should be surprising depending on, you know, considering what we are all going through emotionally, this whole year and financially and everything else. So I was looking at this and they had quoted something that Trump had said to Biden about his son, Hunter, and how it was horrifying about him basically calling out, using it as an attack, you know, using, you know, basically said, it doesn't matter, it's thrown out of the military, dishonorably discharged for cocaine use, which is incorrect. He didn't have a job until he became vice president. When he became vice president, he made a fortune. Now, all of that, I don't feel like looking up because none of that matters to me. What it does, what does matter to me is how interesting it is that there seems to be, much like everything else, an extreme left and an extreme right type of view on addiction. And not even politically, but it as an issue, right? So just because you're right wing doesn't mean you act a certain way about it or left wing a certain way. But there seems to be a polarizing response to addiction. One way is to basically what Trump did and what, you know, Don Jr. has done in different other kind of fucking morons who've been given money, look down on people for, and it's just to shame people. And just as a moral failing, if you have an addiction issue, it's a moral failing. Obviously, you're weak. You know, and you can throw this in like with mental health issues. Same kind of thing, but just people, you know, look down on people like that. And it's, and that's one way of doing it. That's one way a lot of, you know, it's the traditional way of dealing with addiction is to shame them into getting better or dying. And that is one tactic. That is definitely one way to respond, right? However, the, you know, clearly, as most of you know, it's a cold and bullshit way of doing it, and it shows ignorance in its highest, purest form. The other way, though, because it's obvious, that's an obvious thing to talk about, to just kind of point out and go, well, that person doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. And that, you know, addiction being a disorder that you have to deal with, and that people should be encouraged to get help and work on themselves and all that, and certainly not shame family members for somebody's addiction. But this other thing, and I don't really call this a teachable moment, because that implies that I know what I'm talking about completely and you don't. But I wanted to point out that the other side, another view of the addiction is the exact opposite of it. Like, so the extreme on the other side, which is that these people, you know, this is a disease, which I've discussed that, debated about that, about, you know, is it a disease or a disorder? Does it matter? They both ruin your life. Whatever you want to label it, it can still destroy your life. But that people are like, oh, they need help. You know, almost to the point, like, they empathize so heavily to the person dealing with this addiction, like almost absolving them of all their sins. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like they're almost too empathetic. Like, they need your support and your love, and you need to love them. And the truth is in the middle always. It feels like the best path is in the middle, because it's definitely difficult to deal with a family member who's going through an addiction. I hear. It's like, my family told me I was very difficult. No, but that's the thing, is that it, what really helps to finally get at a place where you recover, where you try to get sober, where you really extend and get help, when you realize, when you hit your, what you consider to be your bottom, what helps is you have to lose something. You have to really lose something that you wanted, that you've taken for granted in your addiction. That, wow, this is my safety net, it's always going to be there, kind of a deal. And I saw this happen a lot in sober houses. And you know, I did, you know, because here's the thing, they've talked about, like, Hunter Biden has talked about how he's, you know, been to treatment multiple times. You know, and he's relapsed a couple of times. And, you know, and is doing good now. But the thing about it is that and I don't want to speak for, you know, what I've read. I can't say, because we don't know how much his father enabled him or not, because that's the thing, is that when you can support your family members so much that you enable them to continue to do whatever, you know, that, oh, it's okay, my parents are always going to be there no matter what I do, it's always going to be there for me, it's going to bail me out, I'll always be okay. Like maybe you may not think that, you don't, that's not like the reasoning in your head, but in the back of your mind you think that. While you're continuing to do what you do, it's the urgency to get clean and to fix your bullshit. The urgency isn't as there, because you know in the back of your mind, it's going to be all right. I got people watching out for me. You know, it's there. So it's almost like you have to put your foot down and you just have to, like, you have to, you know, I don't know. It's you have to find that space where you're like, you need to get your shit together, like intervention style stuff. And then go, this is as far as it, you know, after this, you know, because that's kind of, I got the ultimatum. And that's what got me to go to treatment, because it was either go to treatment or lose everything. And not be welcome in, you know, my parents' home or something, like, you know, at that point, which was kind of that was definitely a, you know, a wake up call for me, what, 10 years ago? And And so that's what's got to happen. You have to get to it, because I've seen people in sober houses and treatment centers, in outpatient to inpatient and sober houses that I've gone through. And the thing is, I probably could have gone through more if my family had money. You know, if I was a rich kid, and that's what I saw. I saw rich kids in treatment, and it wasn't their first rodeo, you know, at all. You know, not even close. Like one of my friends who was 22 years old, and it was like his seventh time going to rehab. He's 22. It's his seventh time. And who eventually, while we were still going to rehab, and shortly after that, you know, OD'd on heroin and died when he was 22. And, but the thing is that it never, there was never that sense of urgency. His parents were going to continue to bail him out. You know, if he wrecked his car, they were going to give him a car. We're going to send, make sure he was taken care of, make sure he's like, all right, we'll send you to a different rehab treatment center. How about this one? Maybe this one will fix you, as if the programs itself was what it was. Well, this did, that cure didn't work. Let's try another exercise program. And none of that's going to work unless you know in your brain that it's like, this is, you know, shit's real now. And, you know, you have to really, really want to fix the shit. And that's kind of what I've been looking at, is that it just seems like people fall and they either, oh, that fucking junkie, you know, kind of a thing, or like, no, he needs help. Yeah. You need to sympathize. And they just like overtly, like, you know, he's got no responsibilities of his own. You know, he doesn't need to take any responsibility. He's got a problem. You know, and it's just, you gotta find a middle ground here, you guys, you know? But, I don't know. I was just thinking about that, and sorry if I've lost any of you, but, just keep that in mind when you read, you know, people, they love to politicize a real issue to get you against other people. They love to divide you guys so that you're upset, you keep reading, and you know, keep tuning in. So, you know, watch them when they do that. They're going to go one direction or the other, and just realize that they're both wrong, that the truth is in the middle there, that people need to take responsibility for their actions, but they don't need to be shamed. They need to be supported and loved, but firmly, like, be given an ultimatum and an intervention. Like, it's a fine line. It's not easy. And that's the hardest part. It's real easy to go one way or the other. It's really difficult to find the truth in the middle and deal with what's real. Yeah. Well, I got to end on that. That's the shit right there. Am I right, kitty? The cat's totally asleep. Holy shit. That cat is gone. All right, you guys. Just asleep in his Hawaiian shirt. He looks so peaceful. I wish I had a Hawaiian shirt for my thoughts. Hey, I'm totally going to call it that. That's the name of this episode. Thank you guys for joining me. This has been Yes, I'm Still Sober. I'm John Rabin. We'll see you next week. Hang in there, everybody. Take care of yourselves. Later. Bad boy that pierces skin. Come back down to earth again. The cold is creeping deep inside. Disconnect the telephone line. Gotta get away, gotta get away, get away, gotta get away. For the Lord, don't make a mistake.